As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
All right, James. It is a different feeling around the Leafs right now. Things have changed dramatically in under a week. It's funny how games will do that.
They're going streaking, Jonas.
Oh, man.
Best team in the league over the last 7 days, wouldn't you say?
More like the last day? The last game?
Undefeated. Well, Vegas was... They were basically the Henderson Golden Knights there.
They were hurting.
I've got Robin Lehner in my fantasy pool. It's not been a fun ride so far.
Yeah, they are quite injured, and obviously the Detroit game is Detroit right now. Rebuilding, interesting, young.
Yeah, I think they look a lot better. Like they even if they finish bottom five or whatever, you can see that. I think we talked about them last week. I mean, they're going to be interesting all year.
Well, they do have what I would argue is the best GM in the league. So that helps. But we're not here to do Red Wings talk, James. We're here to talk about the Leafs.
That's the Max Bultman show.
Yes.
You want the Max Bultman show two doors over.
We're going to take questions in the pod bag. We're going to talk about Jack Campbell. We'll talk about Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren. Timothy Liljegren, wow, all of a sudden looks interesting. But
we're gonna talk about Michael Amadio.
We are not.
We're gonna talk about Josh Hosang.
We are not.
We're gonna talk about Mac Hollowell.
The Marlies report. We should do a Marlies report at some point, like every 6 months. How's that?
2 hours with Cloak.
Yeah.
In a closet by himself.
His prospect report the other day was awesome. If people haven't checked that out, like it's unreal some of the depth he has and like some of these prospects. Like it's really good for me just to kind of be aware of what's going on with some of these guys. Like he's got the lowdown on everyone.
Well, now Josh has been doing that for 3 or 4 years for us. So his like connections to all of the teams in Europe and the coaches and everything, he gets some really good stuff now. So it's some people were responding in the comments that this is worth subscribing just for this. So we're going to hopefully have a lot of Marlies and prospect coverage over the course of the year.
All right. But this is not the prospect report pod right now.
My mistake.
So James, I like to play games with you on this podcast. And sometimes you sort of play along, but then you forget that we're playing the game. So we're playing a game today and you need to remember.
Is it crap or not or whatever you were saying?
I decided to revamp it.
Real or unreal?
Today, the game is It's Fine Now or TBD. What do you think?
It feels an awful lot like whatever the hell the last one was.
The last game was called Convinced or Unconvinced, and you kept forgetting that there was a game.
It's the same shit with a different label on it.
Shut up. All right. Obviously,
Jonas is ornery today.
Number one. He was up late
writing last night.
Yeah. Number one, Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner struggled early, didn't look like themselves, but the last couple games, and especially the last game on Tuesday night against Vegas, they were firing. So, James, it's fine now or TBD?
I'm not worried about...
You have answer the question. It's fine now.
I do. You can answer those. I don't think people need a game show every time they listen to this.
No, sometimes we got to mix it up.
Been doing this podcast for 9.5 long,
listen,
painful years.
I am Steve Harvey. I am Patch Sajak. I make the rules.
Steve Harvey, nice. he just laughs at the contestants' insane answers half the time. I think that Matthews and Marner in the regular season, that's not like a real concern. They weren't very good in their first four or five games. But I mean, Marner, you wondered if like the burden of whatever was going on there in those first game was going to hang with him for a while. But
yeah,
it's obviously a very good sign that he's tipsy doodling and doing what he normally does. And it feels like it's interesting. Like you wouldn't... It feels like for him, so much of it is like psychological or something, right? Like he just needs to like...
Well, he admitted as much, James, right?
Yeah, he said it himself. He's like, I got to stop like worrying about things that I don't need to be worrying about when I'm out there playing. And it's just interesting that how much different of a player he looks when that's the case.
But you know what's interesting about it is you could see it. You know what I mean? Like you could see that he was in his own head and like just... tight. And I thought
He's like skating like he's got a piano on his back when normally he can like that goal against Vegas is that's Mitch Marner.
Well, and you could kind of I thought Peter Holland, the former Leaf, that's a deep cut. He had some tweets about it, and I think he made a good point. Like these guys are just humans. Like they feel all this pressure, and they're like he had obviously the playoff performance. He took a lot of heat for that. He's making a lot of money. He's from Toronto. Like there's a lot you could feel getting on his shoulders. And it's easy to imagine him coming into the year feeling all that pressure and putting that weight on himself and being tight. And I thought the most interesting word that was used about him was from Sheldon Keefe. And he just used the word free. And he said, like Marner is playing free again. And I think that's kind of the way when he's even, really rolling.
Even though he's expensive.
He's not free on the cap. No.
Sorry, interrupting you.
But you can see like free, I thought, really describes how he looks again. Right?
Yeah. It makes sense. It'd be interesting to know. I think that we should try and talk to Marner and maybe, you know, talk about, like, I wonder how he came to that revelation or how he was able to move past whatever was bothering him or to start the season, because they need him to lock in that mindset, especially during the playoffs, especially like when the problem it's felt like for Marner the last couple of years is that when the pressure builds to its absolute maximum, he doesn't play like free. He plays like he's really expensive.
Well, you wonder like, I mean, you wonder if Greg Harden, the new peak performance coach, I think that's his title, played any role. Like, I'm reading that book about the New England Patriots, and literally I just got through the part about Greg Harden and the role he played with Tom Brady. And I mean, who knows? We'll I guess, find out.
Good doing time. Doing some work on your time off there, reading about...
No, I'm not reading it for Greg Harden. I wanted to read the book regardless, but it's interesting.
Kyle Dubas has been like a Patriots fan, right? Like, isn't he...
I don't know that.
Isn't he like a...
All I know is he's a Seattle Mariners fan.
I thought he was like a Belichick fan or something.
I mean, who isn't, right? Like, in terms of the way he's managed?
I don't know much about it, but I think that that's like one of the people that like kind of like the... process oriented. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I think that that's one of the people that he's like looked to kind of take some lessons from. Wasn't there an NFL team that was it Shanahan? No, oh, that was back when Babcock was around. Didn't Babcock meet with an NFL team about like, was that the Patriots? I can't remember.
I want to say it was Sean McVay, maybe, or it was, Anyway, I can't remember.
There was an NFL team that he did connect with at some point.
Oh, it might have been Pete. Was it Pete Carroll? I can't remember. I think he visited with someone.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah.
Anyway, are you surprised that things look to be clicking again with Marner and Tavares? Like I thought they should explore this coming into the year. It kind of happened by accident. And it kind of looks like they've kind of got it back a little bit, like they had a few years ago.
Well, I don't even know why it unclicked. So, you know, are we just like, is this just like random chance that it's like going on and off? And
you know why it feels different, James? I think what had happened, so they have that 18-19 season together where they're just phenomenal. Then they start the next season, 19-20. The team kind of sputters out of the gate. They're not clicking. They didn't have Zach Hyman to start the year. Babcock gets fired. Keith comes in, and not long after, like I think it's like a month, he's like, this isn't working. He puts Marner with Matthews, and obviously they take off. And then the only times Tavares and Marner play together, it's like the odd game. When Matthews is out, it never feels like it's something they're going to stick with. You can kind of feel that Marner doesn't have the same energy with Tavares as he did with Matthews. Like he's kind of maybe just waiting for him to come back. And this time is different because like it felt like this could be extended. Like it wasn't necessarily that they were just going to get right back together the next period. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but
if they can figure it out, I think that this makes a lot of sense just with the way that Nylander's playing and the need to get, like, Tavares has looked really, really good the last couple of games. I mean, that's what you want. And it makes sense that with the way that his skating is and even his stick handling is not all world, like, you're going to want like a fast, skilled puck transporter like Marner playing with him. I just think not that Nylander can't do that, but I think that it just makes a lot of sense. Whereas if you put Matthews with Marner, yes, they were like all world fantastic last year, but it just made the Leafs, especially when Tavares got hurt, it made them really easy to shut down.
Yeah, well, and right now they kind of feel two-line dynamic where those are basically two number one lines. And I thought it was interesting, James, like you look at the ice time from that game on Tuesday night, and granted, it's like it becomes a blowout, so the third period is kind of a wash. But you look at the ice time, like Marner played 13:01 5-on-5. William Nylander played 16:51. Tavares 14:12. So like Marner's, when he plays with Tavares, he's playing a little bit less.
So on the season, their minutes are down.
Slightly, like Marner is down, it's like a minute and a half.
That's not nothing.
That's well, not because
that was one of the talking points. I don't know if you wrote about it, but I've seen some of the.
I did.
You did write about it
at some point.
Did you say that they should cut their minutes down? So Marner for the season's at 20:45, which is, I mean, what was
he was 21? Like 22 and change last year.
Mm. And Matthews is down to 20:19. I mean, part of that with Matthews, though, is obviously coming off the injury. And then, I mean, I guess if Nylander's playing as well as he is, you dial him up a little bit. Nylander is at 19:07, which is up. And Tavares is 18:32, which feels like it's down a little bit.
Well, he played 15 and a half minutes against Vegas. Again, like the blowouts kind of impacted. They had that 7-1 game in Pittsburgh. But like you mentioned Matthews, and that's the other part of this, it's fine now debate. That was, I think, the best he's looked, period, this year, which isn't really surprising when you think of like what he was going through. Like we probably underestimated how difficult it all was to compress all that stuff, have the surgery in mid-August. Then there's training camp, then he's skating again, then he's handling the puck, and then he doesn't play in the preseason, then he just misses the first three games, and then he comes back. Like, we probably should have anticipated more of a hurdle, but I think because it's him and because he played through, you know, that situation last year and performed, like, we probably just thought, yeah, he'll be fine.
So he's got 3 goals in 7 games. He missed 3 games with the wrist problem. His shooting percentage is up to 9.7%. That's like almost half, a little more than half of where he normally is. So if he was shooting normally, he'd be at 5 or 6 goals in 7 games. He's on pace for 34 goals in 79 games. I say he does it.
That's fair. I mean, him and Nylander were humming like to start that game. They were just like, it was like all of a sudden the connection was back. Like they were finding each other constantly. And Matthews had like 2 or 3 or 4, maybe 5 chances to score in the first like 10 minutes of the game.
The most encouraging thing to me was the power play, and they finally found that goal that, you know, the other team has to respect the shot of Nylander on the one side, and then Matthews is coming down the other side, and like that feels almost unstoppable if they can connect on that. You got Tavares going to the net, and then the D's worried about him, almost like a decoy, and then the pass comes across, and like it's just effortless for Matthews to put it in.
All right, well, James, that's the next question in our game. The power play, it's fine now or TBD?
Oh, huh? Yeah, we're still playing this.
We're still playing.
Crappy game.
It's not crappy.
I don't know why. I think it's the TBD.
TBD.
It's too early to say it's fine. It's fine now. That's what I would say. What's the power play percentage is?
17.9% for the year, which is not good.
Which is 21st in the NHL, I am told.
Yes.
According to my phone.
According to my story. Yeah.
You wrote a story?
Yeah, I did. I'm TBD on this one. Like I thought that was really encouraging how good they looked. There was just like a level of I keep remembering the word you mentioned. Like there was a level of chaos to the power play where it felt like they could, like anyone could score. Like they had a look right before Matthews scored where I think Matthews or maybe it was Nylander or maybe it was Marner shoveled it down to Tavares and he had like a jam play that almost scored. And then like you mentioned, like Nylander gets on the opposite side of Matthews and he draws in the defense and that creates just enough room for Matthews to get the shot off. Like that's why their power play should be good. Like there's no reason this power play shouldn't be top 5 in the league.
A big reason why Matthews and Marner and to some extent Tavares haven't had their production early this season is the power play. They all only have one power play point 10 games in, which is not going to be the norm.
Well, I forget the number from last year, but I think McDavid had like 30 more power play points than Matthews or something last year. Like just some insane number. Like, I mean, I'm looking at it right now. So Dreisaitl and McDavid are tied for first in the league in scoring. Dreisaitl has 6 power play points. McDavid has 9 of 17. And their power play has just been like off the chain good. But that would help.
Off the chisel.
Sorry, I'm a little too hip for you sometimes. Wow, Troy Terry, 7th in the league in scoring.
Is off the chain like a, is that like a jail reference?
Oh boy. All right, let's move on. But the other part about the power play, James, that is has been...
like the chain
a positive, a positive is their second unit has actually been, it's almost like their second unit just plays. Like there's very little, like they're not overthinking it. They've got like the ageless wonder, Jason Spezza running things and Pierre Engvall's on the power play. That's working. Michael Bunting is a threat. Like that second unit, if they can get the first unit going and then they have kind of that backup second unit, that's promising.
I like how we talk about Jason Spezza like he's like 87 years old.
He is.
I guess he is by NHL standards.
Well, it's like James, like the only, I mentioned this in my story, like the only older forward is Joe Thornton. Like you watch the Panthers, like he barely plays and like he looks kind of like he did last year.
He looks really creaky in the games I've seen, yeah.
Yeah, and like he's now, granted, he's 42, Spezza's 38, but like it looks like Spezza could play another few years with the way he's going. They did not have a great night against Vegas, the fourth line, but overall, like he's been excellent.
Well, Spezza leads the Leafs in power play points so far this season. He's only playing a minute 55 a game on the power play, and he's got 3 points. Those are all well earned points too. Like he's been like kind of like the he hasn't, I wouldn't say he's been the quarterback of the power play, but he's been the leader of that second power play unit.
Yeah, it kind of runs through him. He's obviously sees the ice really well. He's got that fake shot that seems to work.
You know what's interesting is that the second power play unit has been kind of like nothing for like a few years. And
nothing, you're right.
And Spets has been on it. So I wonder why it's different that he's able to make more of an impact this year than past years on that unit.
It's all different elements around him, like Bunting, Richie, Engvall, Sandin. Like, that's all new.
I think it's probably Richie that's making that power play unit better.
Yes. Okay. The last question in our game.
Oh, God.
It's fine now, James, or TBD, the defense right now. So, the last couple games, Justin Hall has sat. Morgan Riley has played with Travis Dermott. TJ Brody has played with Jake Muzzin. And Sandin and Liljegren have been together on the third pair.
TBD. I think that... oh my God.
I love that you're playing.
Oh man.
Go ahead.
It's too early in the morning for this, Jonas. I think that it feels like they're going to need Justin Hall at some point. And yes. The fact that he's played so poorly that he hasn't even been in the lineup is concerning to me.
Shocking, honestly.
It's great that Liljegren has played as well as he has. I need to see that a little bit more.
Yes.
Do you think that Liljegren is playing well because of who he's partnered with and the kind of minutes that they're giving him and those kinds of things? Or do you think this is he's figuring out the pace of the NHL? Or do you think that they've just been playing teams like Chicago and a Vegas team that's missing its five best forwards and that helps? Or like, what do you think's going all into his success so far?
So I think it's probably a lot of those things. And I think that's an important point about who they're playing. Like, Detroit is like not a good team right now. Very young, obviously. You mentioned Vegas, but like, it's interesting hearing from Liljegren, just in terms of like, one thing he brought up was, he's kind of figured out now just to make a simple play instead of trying to make a better, maybe more difficult play. And you can just see that in terms of like how he handles the puck. He's just making a quick decision instead of like holding it an extra beat and then losing the puck, which was what was happening. And like, I watched those first two games that he played and I admittedly overreacted and was like, they shouldn't play this guy at all. Like, I don't understand this. And then he comes in these last couple games, he plays with Sandin, and suddenly it's like he looks kind of poised and he looks relaxed. And like, I mean, it's not like they're completely sheltering them either. They're not playing against difficult competition, but like, they're putting them in the D zone. And he's been fine. Like, I have to think Sandin has something to do with it, but he's just played better. Like, I did not see this coming. Like, if you told me on November, whatever, 2nd, that Timothy Liljegren would be playing for the second straight game while Justin Hall was a healthy scratch, I would have been like, yeah, you're nuts, dude.
You know, you tell me that anyway.
Yeah, all the time.
I think part of it is probably Liljegren. He just has a comfort level with Sandin that you can see. Like, they're friends. They know each other. They've played together with the Marlies quite a bit. I think that that's part of what goes into his success as well. So, I don't know. The other thing, too, is that Muzzin and Brody has looked pretty good.
Well, that's what I want to ask you next. What do you think of that?
I mean, I think they've been fine. I think they've been real solid. You know, there's nothing particularly flashy about that pair, but they're both not the fastest guys on earth, but they make smart plays and they haven't gotten themselves into trouble. And we'll see, Jonas, how this works when they play against, I mean, they got Tampa rolling in here on Thursday, and they've got Boston on Saturday, I believe.
Yep. So those are two pretty good top lines. Although
teams that have some firepower, that's going to test this blue line configuration a lot more.
What I like about it is it puts their two best defensive defensemen together. You know, like, I understood putting Hall with Muzzin. Like, you kind of get a bit more balance. Like, Muzzin can lift up Hall. Brody can help Riley. But like, if you're looking at like, what's your best combination for defending top lines in the playoffs, I kind of think Muzzin Brody makes more sense. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I think it's gonna, like, what do you think happens with Hall? Where do you think this goes?
I think what I would do is find a way to bring him back on the third pair as opposed to put him back in the top four. But I don't know that Dermott has really solidified that top four spot. So that's the big
meatball to play your amazing.
No, I'm not going to say it. That's the big meatball. That's something you would, that's something you would say. The big spicy meatball.
Well, James, to your point, the numbers for Dermott and Riley in like a tiny sample size are not good. Not great.
Well, I don't know what was going on with Dermott in the Vegas game, but he was like hurt and then he left or something and went down the tunnel and got a picture taken of his, of something to see if it was hurt. And, but then he didn't play. And I mean, how many minutes did he have in the game against Vegas? It wasn't like a whole lot.
14?
Yeah. It just seems to me that, I mean, regardless of it, so on the season, he's averaged 14 minutes a game.
Which is like barely above last year.
Yeah, he was like 13 and change last year. So it just seems like
they don't trust him.
You know, Liljegren's playing more than Dermott.
Yes. And
Sandin's playing more than Dermott. Like, it's almost like he's, I know it's early, but it seems like he's been passed already.
Well, the red flags for me are that they're trying to protect a lead against Detroit over the weekend. Dermott doesn't play the final 10 minutes. They have penalties to kill against Vegas. Liljegren plays ahead of Dermott. Like, those are indicators to me that they're still not there yet with Dermott. And like, he's over 200 games in the league. Like, it's not like he's a prospect anymore. Like, he's not Liljegren. He's a lot older and more experienced. You know what I mean?
Well, it's going to be pretty stark if he gets passed by, I mean, if they want to mix Hall back in, you wouldn't want to take Liljegren out right now. You wouldn't take Sandin out. You'd probably take Dermott out, right? You'd
probably take Dermott out. Yeah. I don't know what you do though. Like, you've won the last two games. They just played their best game of the year.
But, well, I would leave the decor the way it is right now. I mean,
for another game.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a difficult situation to manage because obviously if you were to take Dermott out, then you make Dermott unhappy. But if you keep Hall out, like, you're kind of, You risk losing him, I think.
Like I said early in the show, I think they're going to need him, right? I think
I do too.
So
I also think, James, like, this feels like they're going to have to get someone better.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you're counting on Dermott and, like, what you might get from Hall, like, that doesn't feel like it's going to be good enough. Now, can they do that? I don't know. Anyway. Game is over. Thanks for playing. You were a great contestant. I really appreciated that. Let's take a break and then let's come back. We'll do the pod bag. We need to talk a little bit about Jack Campbell. We're supposed to talk about Sandy and Liljegren, but we just did that. So I'll have to come up with something else. All right, James, get ready. We'll be back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay.
No more games, Jonas.
Now the games are over.
No more games.
You were a good contestant, though. I appreciate you playing along.
No more games.
Okay. Let's talk about Jack Campbell. His record as a Leaf, I believe, is now 24-7-4. That's nuts.
I need some sort of clever name for him. I got to come up with something. What if I did like Campbell with like MVP in the middle? That might work. Like CAMVPBELL.
Well, it looks like you're finally going to get your Vezina Anderson. That's going to happen now, clearly.
He's been the best goalie in the league so far, Frederik Anderson.
Yeah.
His numbers are just incredible.
He, right now, as we're recording this, has a 7-0 record with a .956 save percentage.
maybe he did need to get out of Toronto. Maybe Toronto was what wrecked him and not the other way around.
What does that, I don't know what that tells us though.
It tells us, Jonas, that goalies are voodoo and like good luck predicting what the hell's going to happen. I think I said this on a previous show, but when I was doing my fantasy draft, there's a lot of Leafs fans in the pool that I'm in, and Anderson was dropping like a stone. And eventually we got to like round like 10 or whatever. I was like, you know, fuck, like I'm just going to take him. And he's been amazing. And I'm in second place right now in part because of how he's played.
James, are the Athletics, I don't know what you like. He's our statistical expert. What's like our expert on every kind of model there is for the league? Dom?
Analytics writer.
So he was at the game on Tuesday and we were talking about goalies, and he said one of the things like he's had to do to adjust his model is place a higher emphasis on more recent performance as opposed to 3 to 5 years. And I thought that was interesting, like, because if you look at Jack Campbell, like if you looked at the previous 4 years, 3 years, but if you look at like the last year and a half, maybe that's more indicative of what he is. I don't know what that tells us about Anderson, because like Anderson wasn't good last year. So well, I don't know.
On the flip side, like Anderson was good 2.5 years ago and not good the last year and a half. And then now he's a world beater. I think what it tells us is it's still a little early. Even with Jack Campbell, it's still a little early to know what he is. And I'm sure this is probably part of what we're going to talk about, but the Leafs have to try and figure out what kind of a contract to give him. And some of these goalie contracts are really, really tough. You see guys that have barely played, you know, like Chris Driedger in Seattle getting contracts for 3 years. I mean, it happened to Carolina, which I think is one of the smartest teams in the league. And they went with Scott Darling and did they give him a
4-year deal?
4-year deal for $4 million a year or whatever. And he had only played like 50 games or something, and he turned into a pumpkin and he was awful. And I believe they traded him and the other team bought him out or something like that. And I don't know where he's playing right now.
You know what I would do, James? Nothing. I would wait.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing you risk though, Jonas, is if Campbell keeps playing like this for another 30 games, all of a sudden the price goes.
But what's the max price is what, James? Like, I think there's a max on what he can get from anyone.
5.5.
I think that's like the max. Like 5.5 is pushing it. So like, I don't know what you gain really by doing it now. And like, I still think you need to see it. You need to see if like he can handle this workload, and we'll see how Sheldon Keefe manages starts between him and Peter Mrazek. But I don't know, like you could get into a situation where you sign Jack Campbell now, you've got Peter Mrazek for the next 2 years, and then both guys just like kind of are just meh, and then you're stuck with these two guys. You know what I mean?
Goalies are tough. I can see. I don't envy GMs having to like figure out how to pay a goalie and which goalie to pay. And I feel comfortable saying that Jack Campbell's an NHL goalie, and like he's at minimum, he's a tandem guy that you want playing 35, 40 games a year. But the error bars on how good he is it's still really unclear.
Well, and even for like analytically expert driven front offices like Carolina, like, you know what I mean? Like that they can kind of be lost with this stuff sometimes too. Like it's what, well, you said, it's voodoo.
Part of it, Jonas, is I think they need Mrazek to play and they need him to be good, because if you do sign Campbell to, let's say, a $5 million contract, you're going to need to trade Mrazek, because you don't want to be spending $9 million in goal next year.
No, that would not be good.
Mrazek has an .877 save percentage right now. If he does that for the year, then you're going to be stuck with him.
Well, he's only played a 5 periods.
He's played 100 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking, James, like there's like decent goalies available next summer. So some of the UFAs, Fleury, Koskinen, Kemper, Greisch, Korpisalo.
None of those guys have been good this year.
No. Well, it's so early. My boy Halak, who's just been fine.
Well, Halak's getting up there.
Anyway.
You said there were good goalies available, and then you named a whole bunch of guys that are like super old or not very good.
Kemper's pretty good.
He hasn't been good this year.
He's played like seven games. Sample size, James. You seem to forget that sometimes. I do. It's true. One thing I wanted to talk about before we get to the pod bag, David Kampf, like that line, they did, their numbers weren't great against Vegas, but I think it's remarkable like how much they're getting buried and how much they're still kind of surviving. Like Kampf, Engvall, Kasha, I really like that line.
I almost think that Kasha should, like, I'd like to see him play with, I wouldn't want to break that line up because they've played really well. It's almost the perfect line for someone like Engvall, who's like not the most creative offensive player.
Yeah.
But is big and fast and gets in the way. And I know that, you know, Sheldon Keefe has always wanted a line that could do what that line's doing. And you can see why, because it just opens up opportunity for all the other lines.
Yeah. Like, James, their ozone start percentage is 9%.
Well, why would you start that line in the ozone?
you wouldn't. Like, and, but they're hanging, like they're doing well with it. I guess like eventually once Mikheyev comes back, we'll see when he comes back, maybe that gives you some flexibility. Maybe you can move Kasha up. But like
that was one of the questions in the pod bag is what do you do when Mikheyev gets back? What's the timeline on him at this point?
He's like December, late December, based on their timetable. Like he's a long way, and like who knows, like those we saw with Simmons last year, like those kind of things aren't easy to come back from and be good.
Well, right, the good away. News is that Mikheyev's hands were so good and he was having so much success putting the puck in the net that it doesn't matter if he breaks his wrist and his hand every 12 minutes.
Well, and I know those, I understand those questions, but you just never know what injuries are going to be like at that point. So like we can look ahead into December and be like, well, they could do this, but it's like they could be missing two guys. They could be missing no one. We'll see. Let's take a break and then let's do pod bag. All right, James, it is your favorite part of the podcast is the pod bag. It's time to support your local restaurants. We found a Chinese food place in our neighborhood that we hadn't gone to, which was just unbelievable. So we were very happy about that because sometimes like you walk by places in your hood and you never go there.
I need a good Chinese place. Do they deliver out to?
I think it's too far.
The boonies where I am?
Probably too far. But this is just, what I'm just saying is like there are all these places in your neighborhood that you probably walk past and you're like, yeah. And you never go there. And then you go there and you're like, wow, that was unbelievable. So if you have a place in your neighborhood that you walk past many times and been curious about, try it. All right. Go ahead, James. What do you got?
Peter S. has some nice words about our Premier League coverage.
Nice.
Do you ever watch Premier League soccer?
No.
He says, fellas, this year I've really started to watch the Premier League. And the Athletic's coverage has been fantastic for someone who's learning the tactics of the sport. Do you know the TIFO guys? Are you going to have them as guests on the podcast? I don't know if there would be... I mean, Peter, I know you would like that show. I don't know if we would get widespread interest in. Do you know what the TIFO guys are, Jonas? They do like videos and they do video breakdown kind of things of the Premier League that are like really fantastic. I wish that there was someone like that in hockey. There isn't really anyone that does what they do, but I encourage people to check them out and what they're doing because it's pretty neat.
Do you know what I really enjoy about soccer? And Josh Cloak is like a soccer fanatic and knows everything. I like how some of the words they use, like they call it a side for the team. I like when they say the manager has been sacked.
They're all Britishisms, aren't they?
Yeah. Like imagine if we said like the coach X just got sacked in the NHL. I think
well, the way they use language that. In general, have you been to England?
No, not yet. Well, not really, no.
Or even like at the Globe and Mail, we had lots of like English folks and Irish folks that would work in the newsroom, and it's just like the way they use language is so much, it's like it's more interesting than us, or it's like less,
way better.
They use it more like artistically than we do, and like some of their sayings, and you know, my background is Scottish and some of the Scottish sayings are so hilarious, and I can't wait to get over there. But so I was in London for a month for the Olympics, and just I don't know, you're listening to them talk and what they say, it's, they thought I was a big dumb American guy walking around there, but I was really entertained by like all the different accents and all the different phrases that they used and things like that. It would be fun as a writer to be able to have access to like all those different kinds of turns of phrase.
We should start working them in. I use Defender. I like using Defender. That's about the only one that I've managed to get in. Anyway, what's the next question?
James B., fellow James, says, do you really believe the Leafs have turned it around, or do you see this as shaping up to be a season of inconsistency? And his second question is, which hockey writers do you and Jonas read when you're researching for your own pieces?
So question one, I think it's to go back to our game, TBD. Like, it's still too early, but I think we see, I mean, it's honestly, it's really simple sometimes. When their best guys are playing like that, they're a really good team. When they're just kind of like, okay, they're not as good. Like, it's not really that complicated sometimes.
We need to see another like 5 to 7 games of Muzzin playing better, the decor looking the way that it has, play against some better teams, and the offense clicking for the big guys. And
yeah,
with the way Campbell's playing, they'll be in a really good spot if that's how, if they can get those pieces up and running. Which hockey writers do you and I read when you're researching? He says, when you're researching your own takes. I mean, we have at The Athletic now, we have something like, if you include our freelancers and stuff, we have 50 plus writers at The Athletic. And it's really incredible how many we have.
Yeah, I like just kind of going around the league sometimes and just clicking on a team and then just reading what's going on.
Yeah.
So that's like everybody. Like the Blackhawks guys are awesome. The Blues guys, obviously Dom. Like there's tons of good writers. Portsline with the Blue Jackets. Like,
you know, Sean Gentile's done a really good job for us. And then, like, we don't want to just mention all of our writers, but you know, it's the depth of, if you're a big hockey nerd, the depth of coverage that we have now at the national writers and all the good local writers and whatever, it's pretty remarkable.
Well, I'll shout out our friend of the show, Chris Johnson, because I always read everything he writes.
Yeah. Chris is plugged in and smart. And, you know, I read some of the, some of like, I don't want to call it like fan generated, but like some of like the blogs and stuff I find interesting sometimes. I check them out. You know, there's good young writers out there that are doing interesting stuff. And
Emily Kaplan at ESPN has done some really good stuff, obviously league-wide.
Yep. All some right. of the, like, you know, like the Hot Stove and the Leafs Nation. And
yep.
The industry is at an interesting point. There's just, you know, the newspapers are really, really hurting in Canada. And, you know, obviously there's the Athletic and the writers that we have. But there's just, you know, I feel bad. There's a lot of people with talent that don't have anywhere to write to earn a living. So there's, you know, there's a lot of people that are trying, you know, kind of in this training ground for years where they can't make a living at it. And they're writing for these websites and stuff. It's not great. Like, you know, it would be hopefully more media companies invest in writing and hire more people, because, you know, it feels like that the industry's taken a big hit the last 10 years.
That's why Kendall Roy wants to take over Roystar, right?
I have no idea what any of that. What is that?
Nothing. That's Succession.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. It's on my wife doesn't seem interested. I'm going to have to watch it on my own.
Yeah, you should.
If you watch read it. Like the description of what it is, it's like, eh.
Yeah, that's probably a wrong approach. It's awesome. And you're both in media. Like this is crystal clear, perfect for you.
It's like a media family.
Yeah, it's like basically. I the think Rogers it's modeled thing? On the. No, it's not. It's modeled, I think, on the Murdochs.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting.
It's awesome.
I mean, I want to watch it, but I just my watching television partner, I need to convince.
If not, you just do it solo, James.
I don't have a lot of time to.
Yeah.
I just don't have, you'll see when you got 2 kids and a 3-year-old with a cold and the 6-year-old playing hockey. And last weekend we had to go all the way to Whitby to go to the reptile zoo. When you start doing stuff, we had Halloween.
The reptile zoo.
We did. We went, I drove all the way to Whitby on Saturday. My son did hockey and then he desperately wanted to go to the reptile zoo. So I drove all of it. It was like almost an hour to get there and an hour back.
What's the big attraction at the reptile zoo? Is there like, what are those things called? The dragon, the Komodo dragon? Is there one of those?
No, they don't have one of those. They have like these monitor lizards, which are kind of like that. They're not quite as big as a Komodo dragon, but they're big. But the big attraction, they had a whole bunch of crocodiles. Mm. My son, he's six. He's almost seven. He loves snakes. He's super interested in snakes. So they had all kinds of poisonous snakes. They had like mambas and anacondas and boa constrictors, and like he knows like all the facts about them and whatever. So the crocodiles were like massive, and you could stand like right next to them. It was pretty interesting.
Nice.
Anyway, I recommend all right. the reptile zoo. We had a good time. The only thing is you got to go to Whitby, so, or Vaughan. There's one in Vaughan as well. Tristan C says, what does your gut say at this moment on Austin Matthews re-signing when his contract is up?
Too hard to say.
That's one of your, we can play your game again, TBD.
That's definitely TBD.
The biggest thing is going to be where the Maple Leafs are at.
Yes.
Like if the Maple Leafs look like their cap sheet, as I think they say in the UK, if their cap sheet is a mess and they're not competitive, then I don't think Austin Matthews is going to stay. If they're a contending team, they're coming off a season or two where they've had success, which obviously Austin Matthews is a big part of, then I think he would stay. But I don't get the sense that the Leafs are going to get any kind of a discount. Like, I think it's going to be a big time number for him to stay.
As it should be.
Yeah.
They should pay him like whatever he wants, basically.
We'll see where the market's at for the top players in the league. Like, it, you know, McDavid locked in at 12.5. I mean, you know, if Matthews was up this coming summer, he would get more than that.
Just well, I guess James McKinnon might kind of set the new market for guys like Matthews.
What a steal of a contract. Yeah, so the McKinnon deal will get done, and Matthews can look at that and say, hey, you know, I'm better than McKinnon because of XYZ, assuming that Matthews puts up, you know, more goals than he does over the next couple of years. And I think that just, you know, personality-wise and everything, it would not surprise me if Matthews would want to play in, like, for the Rangers or the, you know, if the Kings get better, or like I could see him wanting to play in a place that has like a real kind of, I think he's going to want to play somewhere where you have a profile and it's like an interesting place. I know he spends a lot of time in California, and everyone always says, oh, he's going to go back to Arizona. It's like, if that franchise is
good there,
read Katie Strang's story on the Arizona Coyotes and tell me that one of the best players in the league is going to go sign there. It's just, it's not reality. It's not going to happen. But, you know, if I had to bet right now, I would say I think Austin Matthews will stay, but it's going to really depend how well the Leafs are managed over the next couple of years and what kind of success they have, and if he thinks he can win a Stanley Cup here.
He may win a Stanley Cup here before then. Who knows? That could change things. Doesn't look that way now, but you never know.
Rich S says the Leafs defense has looked really good the last couple games, but still pretty early. Should we expect more changes? Do you think they should make a trade for a defenseman? I want to see like the next 5 to 7 games before we start talking about what exactly they need to do on the defense.
I think that's fair. I mean, we're a long ways from the trade deadline. They've got a lot of time to kind of evaluate this. But a big thing is like, is Hall going to get back to what he was the last couple of years, or is this who he is now? Because if he's not, like, then you've got a problem, because then you're short.
Well, this kind of goes into the next question, but they would need to probably create some cap space if they want to bring in another defenseman, and they'll obviously have to give up an asset as well. So Darren M asks, well, he doesn't, he more has a statement here. Nick Ritchie looks like a slow fourth liner who doesn't offer much of anything. Do you still believe someone will take his contract off Toronto's hands? I think that there's enough Nick Ritchie support around the league that you could probably give him away somewhere. Although the longer he goes on the fourth line not producing anything, the harder that's going to be.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of value he'd have as an asset. Probably not very much at all. Like, you're just giving him away.
Yeah, you'd have to give him away. And maybe you'd even have to take back a player who's not, you don't love.
Like, I wonder if you get into a point where you have to trade someone like Kerfoot, and then you have to attach something good. I mean, it would get interesting if Timothy Liljegren continues to play well, if he becomes like an asset that you move for someone.
Well, no, I think if Liljegren plays really well, I don't think you move him.
Well, but what are you trading? What are you trading then?
Nick Ritchie for a top 4D.
Right. That makes sense. Ritchie has one.
The
only point thing
with Kerfoot is I think Kerfoot looks real good as like the third banana on the Tavares and Marner line.
You can't have everything. Like if you want to address this, like you have to do something. You
can't always get what you want.
There's a song about that apparently. Ritchie, 10 games, 0 goals, 1 assist, 12 shots, 12.29 a night. Lots of hits. Leads the team in hits.
There are a lot of questions today about the Campbell contract. You know, we're working on a story on that. So it's kind of a little bit in flux right now. What's going to happen in that situation?
I think we addressed it.
Yeah. Jeremy B says, do the Leafs lose more players than other teams on waivers? The last few years, it feels like they've lost 2 or 3 players every year on waivers. None of them are huge names, but it does impact your depth if you keep losing guys. I wouldn't say this has been like something that's happened. It seemed like it happened last year and this year, but I don't know. It could be because the Leafs are signing a lot of these like veteran guys to really low contracts and like Boyd and VC last year and, Amadio Brooks was already, but maybe the Leafs just have guys. Here's the thing, like the Leafs are so close to the cap that they're often having to put players on waivers that are like their 13th forward. A lot of other teams don't have to do that. A lot of other teams just carry their 13th or 14th forward and never have to put them on waivers. But the Leafs are so tight to the cap that often they're going down to a 20 or a 21 man roster. And then they're having to put guys on waivers. And also, you know, they're like signing these veteran guys to cheap contracts and, you know, like Amadio wanted to come here because he's from here. And, you know, there's a connection here and a pull here for some of these guys. And or is Amadio from the Sioux? He's from the Sioux. He's from Ontario. But so you're getting these guys signing here and then it doesn't work out and they end up on waivers. And I wonder, too, sometimes with those, do you think like the Leafs are like a little bit more high profile? So these guys like have like a little bit more of a profile than the other teams?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It doesn't really, I don't want to say it doesn't matter because like a couple injuries and like you can use those guys, but.
Well, they could just claim somebody else off waivers.
Right. Like, and those guys weren't playing ahead of anyone. Like even if they had Adam Brooks right now, he'd be a scratch.
Brooks isn't playing in Montreal. I think he's played 2 games.
Yeah, and Amadio wasn't playing here.
What's Amadio? I get to say it one last time.
Maybe they'll claim him again.
This is a question for you, Jonas, because I know you've been around the team a lot. Simeon says, with the drop in overall team defense this year, why do you think the penalty kill has been so strong?
I really like their penalty kill. It's really aggressive. The numbers still are just like kind of all over the place, but they use a lot of guys. I like that, like they've started to use Kasha a lot more, and I think he can be a pretty good penalty killer. I mean, like you just watch that Vegas game, and like Marner is all over the place, Kasha's all over the place. Kampf is a really good penalty killer. Their goaltending has been better too. Like that's the thing they did not get last year. Like I think their penalty kill probably would have been better had Vezina Trophy winner Frederik Andersen not been so bad, honestly. Like his numbers on the penalty kill were just awful. But I think their new approach has made a difference.
I was expecting them to be even more like aggressive and more, I don't know, maybe they're still figuring out what, like I thought they would be more like what they call like the power kill and the Leafs would be kind of trying to push for offense more while they're shorthanded.
I don't know, like Marner had like a couple really good chances against Vegas.
Yeah, but Vegas didn't have their 5 best forwards and like the guys they had on that top power play unit were guys that aren't normally there. And
yeah, that's true.
Tom asks, how often does the team practice during the season? What do they focus on when they practice? They practice less than they used to. Like I remember under Ron Wilson and Randy Carlyle, it was I know it's not that long ago, but it's almost like a different era for the NHL. They used to practice like it felt like every off day is a practice.
I don't know. They practice a fair bit now.
Well, they take more off days now than they used to.
Well, because they're mandated now. They weren't mandated, I don't think, for a while.
But the Leafs take more than are mandated, don't they?
Not really, honestly. They mix
in like an extra one once in a while.
Sometimes. I think what's interesting to me about their practices is they're just a lot longer under Keefe.
Mm.
And that's one big contrast with Mike Babcock. Babcock believed in like short, intense practices and like 30 minutes max. And like Keefe the other day, it was like almost an hour. And that's not really unusual. I think it's interesting. But then they don't morning skate.
Is that all the development team and everything? That's
part of it.
Because Keefe's got like all those other coaches on the ice.
But that's pre-practice.
Right.
They're on the ice. Like I guess the fact that they don't morning skate like they might have before makes a difference. I don't know.
Morning skates are dumb.
It's habit, right?
Why are you doing a morning skate?
Habit.
When they get out there for like, you go through all the like get your equipment on and get your sticks ready and then you're out there for like 20 minutes and then, but it just seems to me that fewer morning skates, maybe like an extra off day a month or something, it feels like sometimes, but you know, when did the mandated off days come in? That was like, that was relatively recently, right? Like 5 years ago? Yeah,
that was like the Carlisle years, like I think, because I remember it being a thing like, oh, mm-hmm. Now they have to take days off.
Mm. And I believe they get 4 off days a month. Is that right?
I think so. And a lot of teams like the Leafs do an extra day. Like they'll be off one. They might only be off one day this week.
Because I remember in the old days, it was like it would be like 7 days a week. Because like when I was covering the team for the newspaper and I was the only person covering the Leafs, it's like you got to work every single day because they're on every day.
Yes.
Which, I mean, people will be like, oh, you know, cry me a river. These guys make lots of money, yada, yada, yada. But the question is, if you're on the ice every single day and you're practicing and playing games and, you know, and they used to practice early, like they used to play a game and then they're back on the ice for practice at like, whatever, 10:45. That never made a lot of sense to me either.
That's gone. It's now 12.
Yeah, I know. Morgan C says, I wonder if you guys listened to the Spittin' Chicklets podcast and heard Ryan Whitney's comments that the Leafs have no chance to win a Stanley Cup. I didn't hear that, so I don't know exactly. Hopefully Morgan's not taking him out of context here. Do you think there's anything to that? Odd timing after they've won some games, but it's something a lot of us fans have felt. The team lacks balance and depth to compete in the playoffs. Can you honestly see this team winning a Stanley Cup? I mean, I understand why there are doubts after they blew the Montreal series and the Columbus series and that they haven't been. That's part of why everything, the city was on fire for after the first 5 or 6 games when they looked really crappy, is that there's not a lot of belief in this team that it's going to be able to get it done. You know, I would say that watching them during last season in the regular season when they really figured out their defensive play and Campbell was on a roll and playing really well. At that point, I thought that, yeah, they had a shot. They weren't among the very best teams in the league, but they were in there right in that next group, and teams from that next group often can win in the NHL. So, but that belief has been shaken in the fan base. I think it's been shaken in the analysts, and they need to prove something in the playoffs before anyone's going to believe that they can get it done.
I just think you need to remember Washington was about to fire, why can't I remember his name?
Trotz.
Barry Trotz. When they won, the year they won the cup, the Blues were in turmoil and obviously made a coaching change. Like, it can look one way and completely change in the playoffs. So, absolutely, they can. Are they a good bet right now? Maybe not, but I wouldn't rule it out. We are out of time, James.
Well, a lot of great questions. A lot of great questions in the app. If you don't have the app, download it at your app store. Go to theathletic.com for subscribe.
/Leaf Report.
Oh, theathletic.com/Leaf Report to subscribe. But even if you don't subscribe, get the app because we have more and more content for non-subscribers. You can also, I believe, you can still ask us questions for the podcast in the app.
breaking news. All right, James, it's fine now. We're done.
TBD.
Talk next week. Goodbye.